Welcome to a special weekday edition, the post-Monday night skirmish edition of the Sound Off. This would be episode 96 here on SCScoops.com. It is Tuesday, January 5th, 2010. I want to thank everybody who has been visiting and bombarding SCScoops.com the last couple of days. And speaking with the webmaster, the site's been doing some of its best numbers ever. A lot of traffic, and I want to thank all of you for that, and thank you all for listening to Sound Off 95, which I did this past weekend. I've gotten a lot of feedback to that. Had a little free time tonight. Lots of things going on, obviously. Ratings have just come in, so I figured why not do something of a breaking audio update here for you. And that's exactly what I'm here to talk about. I want to give some really quick thoughts, my thoughts, on last night's showdown between Raw and Impact, the big January 4th head-to-head battle. I've got some thoughts on Raw, some thoughts on Impact, some thoughts on Jeff Hardy. And the first thing I want to do is talk a little bit about the ratings, because this is a bit of breaking news. The ratings have been filtering in over the last hour or so, very slowly. It's very frustrating that the overall numbers didn't come in right away. The Impact rating came in first. Took a little bit of time to confirm the numbers. Now we're starting to get the quarter hours. I still don't have the final overall number for Raw, although I have a pretty good estimate of what it is. But why don't we just get right into it here. Impact, the rating came out first for the TNA program. 3 hours of Impact, 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time last night on Spike TV. A lot of people with a lot of different predictions on what Impact would do, myself included. Now, my first prediction for Impact I made on the podcast here about 2 weeks ago. And forgive me if my memory is not correct on this. I believe my first prediction for Impact, I was predicting somewhere in the 1.2 to 1.3 range max. On my podcast this past weekend, episode 95, I revised that prediction downward. And so the final prediction I made for Impact, I believe, I haven't gone back and listened yet, but I'm pretty sure I pegged it at a 0.8. I just didn't think TNA, I thought TNA did not do everything they could have done. They did a decent job, but not the best job they could have done to promote the special properly. And going up against an established program, the flagship show like Raw, with the return of Bret the Hitman Hart, I was just very skeptical. And with no matches, mind you, announced except for two knockouts matches, I just didn't think Impact had enough juice on its first night to pop its all-time record rating. I'm actually happy to report that I was wrong. Impact did indeed draw its highest rating ever. And on a night that really is unfamiliar to many of their fans. Now, granted, a majority of the TNA fans, you would have to assume, are hardcore fans. They know that Monday night is wrestling night. And they know that Thursday night is Impact night. So Monday night is an established night for wrestling fans, but still, it is not Impact's usual night. And there were many years ago when Raw was actually airing on a Thursday. It was an unfamiliar night for WWE, airing against Impact on its usual night, and they got crushed. Now, Raw did beat Impact in the ratings. I mean, nobody in their right mind thought that Impact would come right out of the chute and beat Raw or tie the overall Raw rating. I mean, because that's insanity. But Impact did draw an overall rating last night here, looking at the Raw numbers, of a 1.5 composite for all 3 hours. That cannot be construed as anything but a positive. TNA's biggest rating ever, I believe, was a 1.3 that they did on a Thursday night, either last year or the year before. I want to say it might have been 08. But that's irrelevant right now. They drew a 1.5, and this is significant for a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's their highest rating ever. Dixie Carter and the folks at TNA are doing cartwheels. They are ecstatic right now. Dixie went on her Twitter as soon as the preliminary numbers came in, which was kind of stupid because I don't know that anybody had those numbers confirmed, and there have been plenty of times that the Nielsen numbers have come out and they've had to be revised downward, or there's been some sort of glitch. And then the next day, the Raw rating is reversed. And it hasn't really made that much of a difference. It's not a big deal in recent years because Raw simply goes unopposed on Monday nights. It would have been pretty embarrassing for Dixie to go on her Twitter and claim that TNA got a record rating and thank everybody, and then we find out later the number was wrong. But it appears the number is right. Now, looking at the breakdowns here, I mean, that 1.5 rating translates into about 2.2 million viewers over the course of those 3 hours. Now, the show peaked with nearly 3 million viewers for the 9 o'clock to 9:15 quarter hour. That's significant because That went directly head-to-head with the beginning of Monday Night Raw and the return of Bret the Hitman Hart for the first time in 12 years. And mind you, Bret Hart went face-to-face with Shawn Michaels during that opening Raw segment. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, there was a lot more appeal to me, and I think a lot of people out there, in seeing Bret Hart go face-to-face with Shawn Michaels than seeing Bret Hart go face-to-face with Vince McMahon. Because let's be honest here, we know that Bret and Vince have gone face-to-face in recent years. They've made amends. There was even a photo when Bret's DVD came out. You know, he cooperated with WWE to make a DVD a couple of years ago. And there's a photo of him shaking hands with Vince. Contrary to what Bret said on Monday night, Bret did not diss Vince McMahon at the Hall of Fame in 2006. They were very amicable towards one another. Of course, it makes for a better story to say that Vince was a prick, and so that's part of the storyline. But, I don't know, you know, to me, there's more appeal in seeing Bret and Shawn, knowing that legitimately, as far as all of us know, Bret and Shawn have not had any contact directly with one another since 1997, before, not even necessarily last night. When Bret signed his contract, perhaps he sat down with Shawn and Vince. Nobody really knows for sure, but it's pretty well established that he and Shawn have not really had much contact, really, if any contact, in 12 years. The heat between these two was always so real. We know what wrestling is. The two of them did work together. There were many worked aspects of that feud in 1997, but what made it so great was how real it felt. Because you knew, if you knew anything, if you followed news on the internet back then and you knew anything about what was going on, you knew that Bret Hart really did not like Shawn Michaels and that Shawn Michaels was an asshole. And he didn't have much, maybe not much respect, but certainly Bret Hart was not one of his best friends. Once upon a time, the two of them were very good friends, but not in 1997. And so seeing these two guys in the ring head-to-head, face-to-face for the first time in that long was just a surreal moment. And I'll get to that in a second, but I have to say I was disappointed to see that the quarter hour rating for Bret and Shawn did not live up to my expectations. But anyway, let's just finish off with Impact here. The question here, of course, is where do they go? What does Spike TV have in mind for Impact? What were their expectations? Spike TV has to be happy with this rating. I don't think anybody at Spike was realistically looking at a 2, you know, this first night. As the folks at TNA like to say, this was merely the first shot in what they consider a war, and what WWE, believe me, WWE is definitely paying attention to what's going on, but they are hardly concerned, they were hardly concerned last night that they were in jeopardy of being defeated. There may be a little bit more trepidation behind the scenes in WWE today, but they are by no means panicking. You know, but the fact is, Impact did its best rating ever, and you want to capitalize on that momentum. The first hour of Impact went unopposed, and that hour did a 1.69, or about 2.5 million viewers, making that the most watched hour of TNA Impact in the company's history. Now, the second hour, as many people expected, dipped to a 1.44, but it did feature that quarter hour with Hogan, cleverly timed to go head-to-head with Bret Hart. Obviously, that quarter hour did a 1.9, I believe when you round the number up, it comes out to a 1.9. The second hour featured the least watched quarter hour, which is not good news for Desmond Wolfe and the Pope, since they were prominently featured in a match in that quarter hour. That did a 1.16. The third and final hour of Impact declined to a 1.2, although it did pick up at the end. The main event of Kurt Angle and AJ Styles did a 1.3, which is good. I mean, it picked back up a little bit, which is always a good sign. So, again, the question is what happens now? TNA is taping an episode of Impact tonight in Orlando. This episode will not air on Thursday. They are replaying last night's three-hour show this upcoming Thursday night, which I fear will stall some of that momentum. But the decision was made many days ago. This episode of Impact being taped tonight won't air for another, 9 days? Next Thursday. That's going to be a 10-day period from the live show to the next taped show. It's hard to say what happens now. It really is. You know, next Monday night, Spike is putting a live UFC special up against Raw. Raw is firing back with Iron Mike Tyson as the guest host. UFC, you know, wants no part of Monday Night Raw. Spike TV wanted them up against Raw because Spike sees clearly Spike sees some sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here, a weakness in the Raw ratings, which is funny to say because Raw still, you know, does pretty damn good ratings every Monday night. Obviously not anywhere close to what they were doing a decade ago. If Spike is serious about competing head-to-head with Vince, Impact pulling a 1.5 only helps their cause. I can tell you this much. As a fan watching last night, I was not overly thrilled with Impact. I thought there were good aspects to the show that I liked, and I thought there were a lot of bad aspects to the show that need a little bit of work. But the one thing I can say is that I was excited about wrestling on a Monday night for the first time in a long time. I cannot tell you the last time that during the day as I'm sitting at work at the desk, at my desk, all I could think about was wrestling. Raw, Impact, head-to-head, what's going to happen? There was an excitement that I really have not felt in many, many years. I'm not sure if it goes back to the original Monday Night Wars. You know, there have been plenty of Raws over the years where big things have happened, but not you don't have that same feeling of unpredictability, which Impact, a little faux pas there, Impact had unpredictability going for it last night big time because nobody knew what was going to happen from one segment to the next. For better or worse, it was train wreck television, but it was fun. And that is sorely missed on Monday nights. So kudos to Hulk Hogan and TNA for getting me, as a wrestling fan of well over 20 years, excited again to be watching wrestling on a Monday night. And is it going to help WWE up their game as well? You know, it remains to be seen. I mean, if it's a one-off thing, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference in 3 months or 6 months. But if Spike will do more live Monday night specials, if Spike will make Impact on Thursdays live, but keep them on Thursdays, or if they simply move Impact to Monday nights to go head-to-head every week, I think the best thing to do, quite frankly, you know, and this is just me as a fan, I would love for there to be a Monday Night War all over again, even though it won't quite be the same as it was 10 years ago or 12 years ago, but Impact airing on Spike on Mondays from 8 to 10 p.m., so they have that first hour unopposed to Raw, except when Raw goes 3 hours, I think would be ideal, because you'll have an audience going, you know, into the show without Raw. Clearly, TNA had a lot of viewers during that first unopposed hour. If they can put on compelling television, they can keep some of those viewers and steal some viewers away from Vince McMahon. It's obvious that's what happened last night. Now, as far as the Raw ratings are concerned, again, just checking here again to see if there's any updates since I started recording. The final overall rating for Raw is not out yet. Looking at these numbers, I'm guessing it's going to end up somewhere around a 3.8, give or take, which is the best Raw rating in many, many weeks. In fact, when all is said and done, it may be the best overall Raw rating since the Donald Trump show last summer, which, of course, you'll remember was commercial-free. That show did a 4.5. Now, I didn't think Raw was coming close to a 4.5, although I believe I predicted Raw would do a 3.9. So my Raw prediction was a lot closer than my Impact prediction. My Impact prediction was way off. And I give TNA credit for that, and I tip my cap. Raw, I'm pretty sure it's going to end up around a 3.8. Let me just break down the numbers here. Let's see. Well, Raw peaked last night with a 4.4 for the final quarter hour with Bret Hart and Vince McMahon. You knew it would do a big quarter hour. I will say what shocked me, if these numbers are accurate, what shocked me is that the confrontation at the beginning of Raw, which was Bret Hart's very first appearance, he comes out right at the beginning of the show, and almost immediately he calls out Shawn Michaels, his hated rival of 12 years. Here's the first face-to-face confrontation between these two guys in over a decade. That segment was the third highest segment of the show. It did a 3.7 quarter-hour rating. 3.7. Now, 3.7 is a good rating. For the first Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels confrontation in 12 years, I don't see how that's anything but disappointing. And it's obvious that Hulk Hogan took viewers away because the Hogan segment during that same exact quarter hour pulled in a 1.9. Now, that doesn't mean that if Impact wasn't on, that Raw would have picked up all 1.9. I guess the 1.9 probably comes out to about, what, 2.5 million viewers? So you can't just assume that if Impact wasn't on, Bret vs. Shawn would have gotten, you know, a 5.6. It doesn't work that way. But there's no doubt, looking at these numbers, that Impact did pull viewers away from Raw. There were people who wanted to watch Hulk Hogan and not Bret Hart, even though Bret Hart obviously had way more viewers than Hulk Hogan. But I am just stunned looking at that opening segment rating. I mean, just stunned. To me, again, Brett versus Sean, at least initially, that first face-to-face means so much more and was so much more exciting and intense than Brett versus Vince, which did a 4.4. I did not predict that happening. That shocks me. Now, the biggest quarter hour of the show, other than Brett versus Vince, the other big segment was actually the Unified Tag Team title match, Jericho against DX, which did a 4.1 quarter hour rating. During that same 15-minute period on Impact, they pulled a 1.17, which was the second lowest quarter for them of the night. So that's how things look right now as far as the ratings. These numbers are not yet final, but I think they're pretty accurate. Raw obviously wins the ratings battle, no surprise there, but Impact does surprise by pulling in a 1.5, their biggest rating ever, on an unfamiliar night against the juggernaut that is World Wrestling Entertainment and Monday Night Raw. The people at Spike, the people at TNA can be nothing but happy right now, and I'm happy for them, because like I said, I didn't think Impact was a perfect show, and I had a lot of problems with Impact, but I want to see them succeed, because I had a lot of fun last night. I don't wish ill upon TNA. They piss me off because they do a lot of stupid shit that they don't have to do. But you know what? WWE does that too, but I'm used to it with them. TNA has a real chance here to make a difference and to make things fun again. And that's why I'm happy to see them do as well as they did. Where it goes from here with Spike remains to be seen. I don't know. I don't even think the people at TNA know right now. If they were to move to Monday nights on a permanent basis, it would not be for at least several weeks. It's not going to happen next week. Again, UFC is on next week. And I don't think it's going to happen the week after that. It may not even happen this month. But I would love to see it, because there was a level of excitement there. Now, you know, keep in mind here, let's keep a sense of balance here. This was unique in that it was the first time. This was unique in that it was Hogan's debut in TNA in the Impact Zone. This was unique in that you had a ton of surprises. TNA is not going to be able to pull surprises like this out of their ass every single week. The numbers will settle in a little bit. But I really do think there's the potential here to do something fun each week. If they have a vision for where they want to go with their main storyline, and they can introduce new characters, younger characters, not just the Nasty Boys, I think that they can do some really good things here. Now, I'm thinking what I'm probably going to do here, I'll do a full-blown podcast probably this weekend, which would be episode 97, and maybe go into more detail, maybe do a full breakdown of each show. I don't want to go, you know, bit by bit for each show and spend an hour doing it. I'll give you my thoughts in summation here. I'll start with Impact. I did watch the entire first hour uninterrupted before I switched over to Raw, and then I kept flipping for the rest of the night. I will say this. Impact, I liked the little video they had at the beginning, but as far as starting the show, that opening segment, that cage match, I cannot think of a worse way to start off that show. That was a clusterfuck of a segment if I ever saw it. This was my first time, mind you, seeing that cage. I don't know if that cage was brand new, or if that was the cage they've used before for some of their pay-per-view matches, the Steel Cage Asylum. I don't like that cage. First of all, it just looks like a giant bird cage. And the bars are so thick that it was very difficult to see through them. It was very distracting. You know, when you watch a Hell in a Cell match, most of the time they'll have a cameraman inside the cell. So you'll have a lot of shots from the inside, but even if you're shooting a Hell in a Cell match from the outside, it's a mesh fence. It's easy enough to see through it. This was ridiculous. I mean, this cage, I couldn't see what was going on. And what made it worse was, and I felt really bad for Homicide. You know, I used to watch Homicide or Ring of Honor. I would go to ROH shows live here in New York City and watch. And I was never the biggest Homicide fan, but you know, he's a good hand and has his fan following. And watching him struggle on top of that cage was painful. It was the most painful 60 seconds. I mean, it was probably a good 60 seconds, but it felt like 15 minutes. And to him, it probably felt like a lifetime. It was obvious that he was trying to and supposed to climb out of the cage. Now, I don't know if Jeff Hardy was supposed to go climb the cage and attack him up there, or if he was going to climb out and then climb down, and then Jeff would attack him like he did, but or he would attack Jeff, rather. Homicide could not climb out of the cage, and it felt like forever. So somebody decided, shit, we got to help this guy. And everyone starts climbing. At some point, Homicide fell. And I was worried he was going to fall on his head and break his neck and die. This was dangerous stuff, and it didn't have to be that way. So thank God he didn't kill himself. And then we see Jeff Hardy. Now, I know they did a tease earlier showing Jeff Hardy and Shannon Moore arriving at the Impact Zone, but I didn't see it. this was my first time actually seeing Jeff Hardy there in the flesh. I knew he would be there because he Twittered that he was accompanying his friend Shannon Moore down there to try to get Shannon a job, I guess, and pull for him. But there's Jeff Hardy in the Impact Zone on Spike TV, and I have to say that, I think more than anything else, was perhaps the most shocking thing of the night, even more shocking than Ric Flair on Impact, because most of us expected, maybe not last night, but there was a pretty good chance Flair was going to follow his buddy Hogan over to TNA, which is exactly what happened. But I did not expect Jeff Hardy to sign a contract, as apparently he has done, with Total Nonstop Action. Hulk Hogan must have been really convincing yesterday, but apparently Jeff did it mainly because he wants to wrestle, and this gives him the opportunity to wrestle a much lighter schedule than he would have as a WWE main eventer. That I can understand. And look, I don't begrudge Jeff for that. If he wants to wrestle, but he doesn't want to invest his entire life and go out on the road, I get that. But I will say this. It leaves a sour taste in my mouth. Jeff Hardy, apparently, from what I understand, had a verbal agreement with WWE that he would come back. They had a date in mind. And I even talked about it this past weekend, just a couple of days ago on the podcast, that the rumored WrestleMania card, one of the matches WWE was hoping to put on the WrestleMania card, was Jeff Hardy and CM Punk. Punk has been talking about Jeff Hardy every week nonstop, almost since Jeff left. And they've been plugging the shit out of his DVD. He comes out, he calls him the charismatic enabler, he's a drug addict and this and that, and you felt like it was building towards something. And that's because it was. And I'm pretty sure that the verbal agreement he had with WWE was for a date before WrestleMania so he would come back. In this case, I mean, he really just put the screws to World Wrestling Entertainment because he didn't give them any forewarning. It came as a shock to them. I don't want to say that this is on the same level as Lex Luger showing up on the first Nitro in 1995 because that was a completely different era and a completely different situation. But it's very similar in many ways. And in my opinion, you know, Jeff owed it to WWE to at least give them a heads up. Because WWE, for all the crap I give them and other people give them, you know, and not pushing enough of the younger guys and practically killing Kofi Kingston on Monday night, but that's neither here nor there. They gave Jeff an opportunity, and more importantly, the fans did. The fans kept cheering for him. The fans kept buying his merchandise. The fans told WWE, we want you to push this guy. And WWE listened. He became a world champion. In fact, Jeff won the world title two or three different times last year. He was main eventing SummerSlam against CM Punk. He was selling more merchandise than anybody in the company except maybe John Cena. Even before Hardy left the company, WWE was very, very happy with Jeff just before he left, because everybody knew Jeff was leaving, and Jeff gave it 100% every night, and they appreciated that. And they even told Jeff, who wanted, he had aspirations of becoming an actor, starting his own reality show. They helped Jeff set meetings up with agents in New York. They said, look, we're willing to help you. We'll help promote these projects. Take as much time as you need. We'll work with you on this. They came out with a Jeff Hardy DVD in time for the Christmas holiday. He even got a freaking Slammy Award on the Slammies less than a month ago that his brother accepted. In my opinion, Jeff Hardy should give that Slammy Award back. And, you know, Jeff has a lot of fans in WWE, too, that are going to be disappointed by this. I mean, you know, they could just flip the channel and watch Impact, but it doesn't work that way. I am bothered, in some respects, by this Jeff Hardy deflection. It's a short-term contract. Nobody knows exactly the length of the contract, but it's a full-time working contract with the competition. And he is not going back, at least not now, certainly, to WWE. And I just think, I don't know, if I'm Matt Hardy, you know, Matt Hardy hasn't exactly been pushed all that much of late, but I'm not feeling too good right about now considering what my brother just did. And the thing is, like, you can say, well, who cares? Matt Hardy's his own man, they're grown adults. That's absolutely true, but you're discounting politics in wrestling. And politics in wrestling, they're bullshit, but they exist. And I don't think this is going to do Matt Hardy any favors. Ric Flair, there he is in the Impact Zone. He didn't do anything. They didn't let him speak. They didn't even let him give a woo. Obviously, you don't want to blow your load in one night. That goes without saying. But they should have had Flair speak. They should have had him do something. He looked like an idiot just walking around. Why he walked out in the middle of the main event and walked away, I don't have any explanation for that at all. It just did nothing but take attention away from AJ Styles and Kurt Angle, who had a really good match. I did see you know, a nice chunk of that match last night, not the entire thing. But Ric Flair, you know, huge name. Flair still means something to the ratings. Not everybody does. Flair still does. That's a big get for TNA. I had no interest in seeing Ric Flair unretire and come back, but it's Ric Flair's career, it's his life, he needs the money, and so what are you going to do? Hogan, Hall, Nash, Waltman, you know, Hall and Waltman, you get what you get. I have no use for either one of them. Hall, I'd say Hall looks a little bit better than the last time I saw him, and I guess he does, but he's still bloated, he still looked drunk. It wouldn't surprise me if he was on something last night. He looked a little out of it, which is a shame. The little NWO reunion was kind of cool. I missed most of it, I will admit. I mean, I have read about it, and I've seen clips on YouTube. I didn't see it live, the whole full segment, because I had my eyeballs transfixed on Bret Hart on the USA Network. But Eric Bischoff, nobody knew for sure if Bischoff was going to become a TV character. It does not shock me that he has. Bischoff is very good as a TV character. I think he'll do fine in that role. I think he was probably the best Raw general manager there ever was, quite frankly. It's all fine and good on the first show to make waves. I don't want to see Scott Hall and Sean Waltman, or certainly Scott Hall, walking around on Impact 6 weeks from now, or certainly 6 months from now. I think initially you want to make an impact, no pun intended. You want to come up with some big names? Great. That's fine. And TNA certainly made waves last night. People like Val Venus and Orlando Jordan did shit for me. I could care less about them. But Ric Flair, Jeff Hardy, Scott Hall, these are names that people will talk about. But here's the thing that bothers me about it. We see Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Shawn Waltman in the ring. And guess who's up in the rafters? Sting. You've got Ric Flair on the same show. Jeff Jarrett. It reminded me way too much of WCW in the dying days. Those were not good times for World Championship Wrestling. There's a reason WCW is not around anymore. Again, I'll give them a pass for the first night. I don't want to see these guys on my TV screen every week for the next month. You've got to work AJ Styles in there. He had a great match with Kurt Angle. I want to see AJ involved in the main angle, wherever you're going to go with it. Samoa Joe, get him in there somehow. There has to be a way. Poor Desmond Wolfe, who got jobbed out on Impact and apparently was part of the least watched segment on the show. I'm a little worried about him now. He's had nothing but good to great matches since he came to the company, so I hope the new regime does not brush him aside. I don't know what Hogan has in mind for him. It's way too early to tell. It just seemed they threw a shitload of stuff out there last night. They popped a good rating. I think that's fantastic. It was a little hard to follow, but then again, I was flipping back and forth, so I had a little bit of a headache after a while. But I don't want to put Impact on TV every single week and see WCW circa 2000. I don't want to see that. There's a reason WCW died. And I worry that they may be going down the wrong path, but I'm willing to give them time and see where they go. They seem to have a plan as far as a main storyline direction, something where Jeff Jarrett and Mick Foley are going to feud with Hogan. Is Hogan a heel? Is he a face? You know, where does he fall as far as people like Hall and Nash and Waltman? Is he friends with them? Is he going to get rid of them? It did pain me to see the Nasty Boys on TV last night. I believe it was Kevin Nash who was, you know, fielding questions on Twitter several weeks ago from all these cynical wrestling fans saying that, you know, Hogan's just going to bring in his friends like the Nasty Boys. And Nash, of course, was shooting all the rumors down and said, hell, if the Nasty Boys, if I see Brian Knobbs on TV, I'll quit. I'm waiting for Nash's resignation. I will say this, in somewhat of a twisted way, the prospects of a Nasty Boys, Dudley Boys, all-out bloody brawl is kind of intriguing, but again, I have no use for the Nasty Boys. I have no use for Orlando Jordan. I have no use for you know, Val Venus. You know, the same played-out gimmick that was played out 5 or 6 years ago. You know, again, they have a roster chock full of talent, and I just worry that they're looking too far outside the box when all you got to do is look under your nose. You got the big guns. You got Hogan, you got Flair, you got Jeff Hardy. That's fantastic. I still think that there's a chance Rob Van Dam and Mr. Kennedy can come in. That's fine. Put your foot down at that point and say we're going to mix these guys in with our own homegrown talent and talent that we've brought in recent years. The Desmond Wolfs, the Samoa Joes, Matt Morgan, Amazing Red, AJ Styles. Of course, they have Kurt Angle, who seemed to be almost an afterthought last night. He had a great match with AJ. Where does Kurt Angle fit into all this? You know, He's got to fit in there somehow. He's probably the best wrestler on the roster they have, maybe other than AJ Styles. So, Impact was what it was. I thought it was a good show, but by no means was it great. I'm sorry. I will not call Impact a great show last night. It was a good wrestling show. It did what it had to do, but if I judge it on its own merits, they threw too much at us at once. Save some surprises for the next couple of weeks. Why throw everybody out there on the first show? You knew that Flair by himself, Hogan by himself, Jeff Hardy, those three alone, that's all you need. You don't have to throw everybody else out there. You know, dial it down a little bit. Slow down. But I am very anxious to see where they go with this in the upcoming weeks. But again, too much WCW stuff. You know, the NWO, Sting in the rafters, who's in the limo, you know, people getting attacked by mystery assailants backstage, and who the hell knows if they'll even tie up those loose ends. Just be careful. It would be my advice to them, and obviously they could give two shits about what I think, but as a fan, I want to see TNA succeed, and I want to see them succeed, do their own thing, don't just rehash angles from 10 years ago. Now, speaking of angles from 10 or more years ago, my thoughts on Raw, really quick. Bret the Hitman Hart back in a WWE ring. I thought Bret looked pretty good overall. He's aged, obviously, a bit. He's 52 years old, and he suffered a stroke several years ago, so Bret was not going to look like the Bret Hart from 1997. When he took his jacket off at the end of the show, he had a bit of a gut. If he's going to wrestle, as is believed, he will have some sort of match or street fight with Vince McMahon at WrestleMania. Hopefully he can get into ring shape. I'd love to see Bret wear the pink tights again and the pink shades. I don't know if he will, but if he does, he'll have to get into the gym. I'm not sure how physical Bret can get, but aside from that, I thought he looked good. I really did. I didn't know what to expect. I've met Bret in person. I met him a couple of years ago. So this would have been in 2005 at the Ringside Fest here in New York City. That was only about 3 years, maybe 2 or 3 years after the stroke. And even then he looked pretty good, although you could tell he was still suffering from the effects. Now it's many more years later. He's really had what I would consider to be a miraculous recovery. There's different levels of stroke, just like there's different levels of heart attack. I don't think Bret had the most severe form of a stroke, unlike, say, somebody like Dick Clark, who still appears on New Year's Eve on ABC every year, and unfortunately Dick Clark does not sound anything like the Dick Clark of old because he suffered a stroke and has not fully recovered from it. Bret Hart was fortunate in that, for the most part, in terms of his general physical appearance and his speech, he was able to relearn how to speak and relearn how to walk. He had to relearn all those things, and he's come a long way. To see him climb into the ring and do the Hitman pose and hold a microphone in his hand and speak loudly and clearly. He didn't stumble too much. Was really, really cool. I was a little bothered by them remixing his theme music, but I got over it. It's one of those minor things. It doesn't matter. I'm actually already... That new music is kind of growing on me. I think, you know, his old theme was so iconic, they should have just left it alone, at least for his first appearance back, because part of me thinks that when the music first hit and that first guitar riff was over, and then the music kind of changed, people were taken aback. I don't want to say that it hurt the pop. It might have hurt the pop that he got, which I still think was a great pop. It wasn't the same reaction he would have gotten if they were in Canada, say, but I think people maybe thought at first, oh, shit, it's the Hart Dynasty coming out, since their theme music sounds very similar. But Bret got a great reaction from the crowd. It wasn't one of those 10-minute-long sustained Hogan ovations, although Bret went right into it. He didn't milk the crowd for all it's worth. I love the continuity of mentioning Jerry the King Lawler. Bret did win the King of the Ring in that building in 1993, my favorite King of the Ring tournament. It's awesome. You know, the matches he had with Mr. Perfect and Bam Bam Bigelow that night, I love those matches. And that little wink and a nod over to Jerry Lawler, their classic feud that went on for well over 2 years, was awesome stuff. Bret called Shawn out right away, didn't waste any time, and you know, I've had people email me and say, what do you think about the hug? Do you think it was right or wrong? And people loved it, people hated it. My looking back on it now, almost 24 hours later, or actually it has been 24 hours now, the segment to me was so surreal. It was just, I never thought that we would see Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels face-to-face in a ring in WWE again. And so, to me, it's like anything that they do is better than nothing at all, because nobody expected we would ever get closure. To see these two guys, if they were genuine in what they were saying, if they truly have put this behind them and they shook hands and they embraced on TV, and if a lot of that was real, I think that's pretty cool. looking at the awkward hug that they, the two of them shared, I tend to think that it was mostly just, you know, they were scripted to do this, that they're still not very fond of each other at all. That's not to say that, you know, Brett and Sean are going to be drinking beers and hanging out at each other's houses now, but I think there's still a lot of bad blood there. I don't think that they truly meant what they said. But again, here's the thing. You go back to 1997, all the bullshit between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, it felt real. And much of it was. The barbs back and forth, they just did not like each other. And actually, that's kind of what led to the bad blood reaching a boiling point, is that, you know, Bret got tired of Shawn going on TV every week and making cracks about him and his father and how Stu is dead, you know, but he's just walking around, he just doesn't realize that he's dead. All those things like that, it made it so personal. In a business now that's so scripted and so, you know, they stick to the script, they stick to the formula, everything is all kind of PG'd up and predictable, there was still a magic between these two guys standing in the ring face to face. And it didn't sound like a scripted, rehearsed promo. I was glued. I was literally on the edge of my seat with my head and my chin planted firmly in my hands watching this first 15 minutes of Monday Night Raw. And I can't remember the last time I did that. So would I have booked it this way? No. But I still think it was a really, really cool segment. Just because we got to see Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels face to face. When Bret signed that contract to come back, I was worried that they were not going to put them together. Maybe Bret didn't want to work with Shawn or Hunter. He didn't want to have anything to do with them. And maybe he still doesn't. Maybe that's why they did this. They blew it off because they don't want to work with each other. But I was hoping we would get that face-to-face, and that's what we got. That's an image I will have burned in my brain for many years to come. But again, I would have booked it a little bit differently. I'd have to give this some thought, but I definitely would not have booked them to reconcile so quickly. I would have milked it for at least a couple of weeks. The thing is, Bret can't work a match with Shawn Michaels. He can work a match with Vince in that he doesn't have to take any bumps, and it could be a 10-minute street fight. But if they were going to promote a Bret Hart-Shawn Michaels match, there's a certain level of expectations that people would have that they simply cannot match. Bret simply cannot have that type of match ever again, physically. He is unable to. And so it would be wrong, I think, to kind of milk it to the point where people started to think, holy shit, we're going to get a Bret Hart-Shawn Michaels match at WrestleMania, when there's no chance of that happening. I mean, maybe Bret and Shawn could find themselves on opposite ends of a six-man tag or something, but that would be the extent of it. So I get the fact that they didn't want to milk it, and they wanted all the focus to be on Bret and Vince. But there's just so much bad blood there, even if they have buried the hatchet. Just people know that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels hated each other's guts. And there was a certain palpable feeling watching them in the ring. They could have milked this a little bit more. They could have had Bret call Shawn Michaels, you know, scum like he used to, boy toy. Used to crack me up every time Bret Hart would come out on TV and, you know, he would go, Shawn Michaels, you know, boy toy, get your little pierced navel and, you know, you pose for girly magazines. I love that. And I felt they could have done more with it instead of just going to the sappy little hug, which again looked very awkward and very, very forced. But really cool stuff. The Bret Vince stuff at the end of the show, I wasn't as into that. In fact, I was kind of bothered. If you looked in the background, you saw a shitload of people leaving the building in the middle of this segment, which I just could not believe that there were people walking out in the middle of the Bret Hart-Vince McMahon climax on this show. Idiots they are. I don't care if you have work the next day. It's one of those things, you stay in your seat and you just enjoy it and watch it and soak it all in, because you may never get to see something like this again. This is not your typical episode of Monday Night Raw. This was a special moment, and I don't think the people in that building fully appreciated it. The stuff about Vince saying how, you know, WrestleMania 2, I knew that Bret was going to be a star, obviously that's bullshit. Vince McMahon did not think that about Bret Hart during the WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal. I guarantee you that. I don't even have to know Vince McMahon personally to know that that's bullshit. But, you know, again, it works for the storyline, so I have no problem with that. Again, I felt that Bret should have done more. He just kind of stood there and accepted this bullshit diatribe by Vince. He looked, you know, the Hitman character looked a little bit like he didn't trust Vince entirely. They were posing around the ring, and then Bret kind of let his guard down a little bit, and then Vince planted his boot firmly in his balls. Bret crumbled to his knees. The crowd booed. Bret did get up a little too quickly and kind of no-sold it, put his hands on his hips and was walking around. But again, it's the first shot. This is something that is likely going to play out over the next 3 months, leading to something at WrestleMania. You can't have Bret Hart come out and put Vince McMahon in a sharpshooter on night one, because you got to save it for later on. You got to build to it. You got to make people want to pay money to see it. I get that. But I just felt like they could have done something else. They flew the Hart Dynasty out to the show at the last minute. They should have done something with them. There's still time to get them involved. I think it would be a shame if they just completely blew off the whole DX thing and didn't involve them at all. I'm hoping that even though Bret and Shawn quote-unquote reconciled, that maybe there's still the potential to do something there. But again, it's possible they just don't want to work with each other, you know, and Shawn's moving on to The Undertaker and Triple H is moving on to whatever he's going to move on to. But again, would I have handled it that exact way? No. There's a million different ideas that you and I could come up with for this angle. There's so many different ideas, it's dizzying. This is the path they chose, and I trust that they're not going to fuck it up. I don't think Vince McMahon would fuck up his own angle, one that he's involved in, even if Triple H doesn't like Bret Hart. And Triple H has a lot of influence backstage. I don't think this is going to be sabotage. I think the only thing that will sabotage it is if they just don't come up with a very good plan to bring Bret back. Now, is Bret going to be on Raw next week? I don't think so. I don't know. He will be back on Raw in the next couple of weeks, I guarantee it. But I don't see Bret Hart coming back on Raw every week. There's only so much you can do with him, and I just feel like if you do that, you're watering him down way too quickly. You've got to pick and choose when you use Bret Hart and what you do with him. How they reintroduce him, I don't know. But if I'm WWE, I would love to see Raw hosted in Canada sometime in the next 2 or 3 months. You know, you look at the schedule, they have no Canada tapings whatsoever between now and WrestleMania. And to me, I know that they didn't, you know, these schedules are put together way in advance and they didn't know that they had Bret under contract at that point. But to have Bret Hart under contract and to not at least have one appearance where Bret can walk out into an arena in Canada is insane. It is insane. And I know WWE can switch around TV tapings because even though Vince McMahon got fucked over by E. Stan Kroenke and the Denver Nuggets, we know the Denver debacle from last year, and they claimed, oh, this is BS. How could you do this to us? And then I think a couple of weeks later, in an odd touch of irony, WWE actually, I think, switched TV tapings for another city and screwed a whole bunch of people out of, you know, what they were hoping would be a Raw taping in their town. So they could easily swap out a taping in February or March if they wanted to and move it to Toronto or Montreal. I think they should. I think the reaction that Bret would get in Canada would be 5 times bigger than what he got last night. And what he got last night was big enough. You know, I'd be curious if anybody listening actually attended Raw last night, because oftentimes pops in person will sound a lot greater than they come across on television. I thought it came across pretty well on TV. I'm imagining that in the building it was even bigger. And rightfully so. You know, Bret has not been on TV in so long. I would have been disappointed if the fans sat on their hands when he came out. But anyway, Bret Hart is back. It was very surreal seeing him on TV last night, but really, really good to see him looking as good as he was. You know, if you didn't set your expectations too high, I don't see how you could have been disappointed. It's something different. It's exciting. I'm as interested and anxious as you are to see where they go with this and hope they don't screw it up. And I'm optimistic that they won't. But the one thing is that it was a fun night of wrestling last night. You know, the fact that I'm doing a post-Monday Night Skirmish podcast here on SE Scoops is proof positive that last night was a big night, and there's going to be a lot of fallout from it. Where Impact goes from here, where Raw will go, nobody knows. And that's part of the fun, is guessing what will happen next. So one last piece of news here. This also broke earlier today. There was some question with Jeff Hardy signing with TNA, what the status of his criminal case was. And ironically, or maybe not so ironically, the charges that were pending against him are sticking. He was indicted on all charges. None of the charges are being dropped. And the case is moving to Superior Court in North Carolina, which is probably not good news for Jeff Hardy. It doesn't mean that he's going to be convicted on any or all charges, but I think the hope and the belief was that some or all of the charges would be dropped and his legal woes would be over soon. This hearing to determine whether or not there was sufficient evidence to charge him has been pushed back the last 2 months. The hearing was scheduled for January 27th. I don't believe that's the case anymore. They took it off the docket, and I think they're moving ahead. They feel they have enough evidence to prosecute him. And, you know, it's a slew of charges, including cocaine possession, among other charges. Not good news for Jeff Hardy. It would be an ironic twist of fate if Jeff Hardy did get convicted and have to go to jail while under TNA contract. So I understand why TNA would snatch him up. I mean, if Jeff came to the Impact Zone and was willing to sign a contract, he's a big name. In many respects, a bigger name to sign than Ric Flair, considering Jeff Hardy is much more relevant and popular these days to the average wrestling fan than Ric Flair is. So it's a big signing, a big coup, and that was the big surprise of the night last night. Thumbs up and kudos to TNA, but I hope they know what they're getting themselves into, and I hope Jeff is happy. I really mean that. I mean, I hope that he feels he made the right decision, because there may be repercussions from this. There's a lot of very petty people in wrestling and in WWE, and he does have a brother who works there. I'm not saying that Jeff needs to make all of his decisions based solely on that, but this was the big surprise, in my opinion, of last night, was the Jeff Hardy signing and the Jeff Hardy debut. If I'm Jeff Hardy, though, I'm hoping that I made the right call. Jeff Hardy's a guy who main evented SummerSlam and was WWE champion a couple of months ago, and now he's opening up Impact and fighting with Homicide, who, let's face it, is basically a glorified cruiserweight, a glorified mid-carder in TNA. If Jeff's happy taking a lighter schedule and not being the focal point of the show, then good luck to him. But we'll see what his future holds as far as these charges are concerned. Very serious charges still pending against Jeff Hardy. I'm sure I'll have more in-depth thoughts on both of these shows. I'm sure there'll be a lot more news breaking. The ratings will be finalized in the coming days. I'll probably cover all this in Sound Off 97, likely dropping sometime this weekend. But I want to thank you all for listening to this breaking audio edition of Sound Off 96 here on SCScoops.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Solomonster. 400 followers and growing. And, of course, any breaking news, you can get it on the website or on my Twitter, so follow me there. Email thesolomonster@gmail.com. And you can download and get the shows, as always, on iTunes through the iTunes Store. You can subscribe through there. By the way, you can also leave comments on this post here on SCScoops.com on the bottom. You can log in and leave comments directly underneath this posting. For those of you who do not know that, you can go ahead and do that. And again, we appreciate the traffic that has been generated. SCScoops.com bringing you all the news and a lot of it this week. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more. Good showing for Impact last night. 1.5 overall rating. That's a lot to be proud of. I'm more disappointed in the Raw rating than I am disappointed in the Impact rating. I'll say that much. So in that respect, big victory for TNA. And good to see the Hitman back. Good time to be a wrestling fan. So until next time, be well. Stay safe. We will see you with more news this weekend.
You've been listening to the Solomonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.